Okay, we had finished off last week. We were in 2 Kings. So if you want to turn there, we're going to be in chapters 20 and thereafter. We had just gone through Hezekiah's prayer. We read a little bit about that. Isaiah had prophesied the fall of Sennacherib. And then the Lord had spoke a little bit about the king of Assyria. And we were just at the end of 2 Kings chapter 20. And I wanted to just briefly hit Hezekiah's illness and death there before we get started into another king, which would be Manasseh. So I'm in 2 Kings chapter 20, and I'll just read a few verses here just to kind of remind us of what happens in the end of his life. There in verses 1 through 3 it says, "In those days Hezekiah was sick and near death. And Isaiah the prophet, the son of Amos, went to him and said to him, 'Thus says the Lord, set your house in order, for you shall die and not live.' Then he turned his face toward the wall and prayed to the Lord, saying, 'Remember now, O Lord, I pray, how I have walked before you in truth and with a loyal heart, and have done what was good in your sight.' And Hezekiah wept bitterly." And then we get to the end of that chapter, verses 19 through 21. It says, "Then Hezekiah said to Isaiah, 'The word of the Lord which you have spoken is good.' For he said, 'Will there not be peace and truth, at least in my days?' Now the rest of the acts of Hezekiah, all his might, and how he made a pool and a tunnel and brought water into the city, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Judah? So Hezekiah rested with his fathers, then Manasseh his son reigned in his place." So that's just a quick kind of reminder and a real brief overview of kind of the end of his life there. And then that brings us to Manasseh, which was Manasseh a good king or evil king? Evil, okay. And he had about a 55-year reign. If we look at, and again, we're just kind of skimming through some of the high points of these stories, but I think they're important to look at. In 2 Kings chapter 21, if we were just to read a few verses there, I'll read the first, 2 through 9, it says, "And he did evil in the sight of the Lord according to the abominations of the nations whom the Lord had cast out before the children of Israel. For he rebuilt the high places which Hezekiah his father had destroyed. He raised up altars for Baal and made a wooden image as Ahab king of Israel had done. And he worshipped all the host of heaven and served them. He also built altars in the house of the Lord, of which the Lord had said, 'In Jerusalem I put my name.' And he built altars for all the host of heaven and the two courts of the house of the Lord. Also he made his son pass through the fire, practice soothsaying, use witchcraft, and consulted spiritualists and mediums, and much evil in the sight of the Lord to provoke him to anger. He even set a carved image of Asheroth that he had made in the house of which the Lord had said to David and to Solomon his son, 'In this house and in Jerusalem, which I have chosen out of all the tribes of Israel, I will put my name forever. And I will not make the feet of Israel wander any more from the land which I gave their fathers, only if they are careful to do according to all that I have commanded them and according to all the law that my servant Moses commanded them.'" Verse 9, But they paid no attention, and Manasseh seduced them to do more evil than the nations whom the Lord had destroyed before the children of Israel. That's a pretty telling 9 verses. Pretty sad. Yeah, Dwayne.
You know, I'm made to wonder how normally when a nation or a government or an entity turns evil, it's over a period of time. It's gradual.
Right.
It gradually comes in, but this is
almost immediately.
I'm wondering if it has to do with his youth, his immaturity, partly. I don't know. I don't know.
Well, and you think about, yeah, because that verse 1 there, and Manasseh was 12 years old when he became the king. Yeah, he's youthful, but you would think, coming off of where they were at, how influential would a 12-year-old be? Kind of weird, isn't it? Probably so. Yeah. Yeah, Hephzibah. which we don't always see that, you know, the name given. So, maybe, like I say, maybe there was a lot of influence there.
The other thing that makes me wonder is that their whole Jerusalem was the Assyrians were at the doorstep, ready to take Jerusalem over, and in a miraculous way, God killed 185,000.
Sure.
Truth.
That just happened. Yeah.
Yeah.
We just read that.
That long ago. That just blows my mind.
I'm not sure we should interpret that his mother being listed means that she had influence. I think all of the kings of the Judah were told their mother's names. I'm pretty sure that's the case.
Okay.
But,
well, yeah, just because it's mentioned doesn't mean that, but somebody influenced him, because his father, you would have thought, had influence over him, didn't have it.
Yeah, his father was one of the better kings.
Yeah.
And then Manasseh was like the worst king. How does that happen?
Yeah, well, and I guess that's my point, is that if you think about it, a 12-year-old, if your influence was your father and mother, and your father was pretty good, and in the few years you had on this earth with your son, in those 12 years, didn't have much influence. Somebody influenced him, you know.
Probably was those who was opposed to his account. And they were just kind of lying back in the...
Well, sure. And we know that.
As soon as he came over, this young child, that, you know, because he just went all the way. I mean,
yeah.
Really.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he reverted everything that had been undone. I mean, you know, yeah. Yeah, amazing how seemingly quick that happened. And then, of course, what was God's response? And we see that here in... Verses 10 through 15. And the Lord spoke. So, of course, it says it aroused him to anger. So, here's the response. And the Lord spoke by his servants, the prophets, saying, because Manasseh, king of Judah, has done these abominations, he has acted more wickedly than all the Amorites who were before him, and has also made Judah sin with idols. Therefore, thus says the Lord God of Israel, behold, I am bringing such calamity upon Jerusalem and Judah that whoever hears of it, both his ears will tingle, and I will stretch over Jerusalem the measuring line of Samaria and the plummet of the house of Ahab. I will wipe Jerusalem as one wipes a dish, wiping it and turning it upside down. So I will forsake the remnant of my inheritance and deliver them into the hand of their enemies, and they shall become victims of plunder to all their enemies. Because they have done evil in my sight and have provoked me to anger since the day their fathers came out of Egypt, even this day. Pretty interesting. You know, I don't know how many times we read, I should have looked that up, how many times we read of the Lord being provoked to anger. But here, clearly that was done. And then, of course, we come to 16 and 17, and there was a lot of innocent blood shed here. But moreover, Manasseh shed very much innocent blood till he had filled Jerusalem from one end to another, besides his sin with which he made Judah sin in doing evil in the sight of the Lord. Now the rest of the acts of Manasseh, all that he did and the sin that he committed, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Judah? So, you know, you go back to verse 6, it says, and he also made his son pass through the fire, practiced soothsaying, witchcraft, consulted spirit, you know, did all these things, and it had provoked him to anger. Does anybody remember, you know, we read, I think it was in, what was it, in 2 Chronicles, we go back to 2 Chronicles, chapter 33 and 6. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, wasn't that where, was it Molech, that he was sacrificed there to the pagan gods. I believe that was where the Amalekites were. So, pretty interesting. Anybody have any comments to the end of that chapter?
This song is really a kind of a preface for what we've been studying on Wednesday night for a while in Jeremiah. It's leading up to that.
It is. Yeah, if we're not sickened by the end of, you know, Jeremiah and all this, of just watching the people ignore, you know, I don't know, it's a pretty good reminder for us, isn't it? Of course, we read it, and we think, well, how silly. You know, it's just like Dad had mentioned, you know, seeing all those people slaughtered in the middle of the night, and you know how that happened, but then you quickly just forget. That's the way we seem to be as people.
You know, the Syrians were all died then, but that actually was 15 years before Manasseh.
Is that long?
Because in the first part of chapter 20, yeah, where God tells his guy he's going to die, he prays to him, and God gave him 15
years. Yeah, it does say that, yep.
And so, and then he says, he also tells him in that chapter, I don't see it right now. Oh, verse 6, 26. I will add your days 15 years, and I will deliver you and this city from the hand of the king of Syria. And I will defend this city for my own sake and for the sake of my servant David. So it's pretty easy to forget in 15 years. And actually, Manasseh wasn't even born when that happened.
No. Yeah, I was going to say 3 years
when
before.
Hezekiah died, and, you know, I don't know if Hezekiah, off the top of my head, I don't know how many sons he had or how many wives he had, but he may have just had one wife, I don't know. But, you know, you remember how many wives and sons David had.
Yeah.
And he clearly had favorites because he had so many mm-hmm. children. So it's much different than our families today.
It is.
You're the king.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, but it clearly was a cyclical behavior. But like you say, you know, there was more time there that passed than you think. But you'd like to think, and you know, in a short period of time, there would be influence, and you wouldn't see that. But there was. Well, so here, you know, at the end of chapter 21, we don't have a lot. But if we go back to 2 Chronicles, we can see in 2 Chronicles chapter 33. Let's see. Verses 10 through 13, we get a little bit more. It says, and the Lord spoke to Manasseh and his people, but they would not listen. Of course, Twain just brought this out. This is exactly what it sounds like, what we're studying in Jeremiah. Therefore, the Lord brought up upon them the captains of the army, the king of Assyria, who took Manasseh with hooks, bound him with the bronze fetters, and carried him off to Babylon. Now, when he was in affliction, he implored the Lord his God and humbled himself greatly before God his fathers and prayed to him and received him and received his entreaty, heard his supplication, and brought him back to Jerusalem into his kingdom. Then Manasseh knew that the Lord was God. You know, we don't really see or read that where we were at there in 2 Kings, but we do here in 2 Chronicles, which is kind of interesting. You know, God gave him a second chance to kind of you know, where he could undo several of his wrongs that he had begun right after his father's death. And then, and let's just stay here, and let me make sure I don't lose my place here. In verse 17, what's it say? It starts off, nevertheless, the people still sacrificed on the high places, only to the Lord their God. Now the rest of the acts of Manasseh, his prayer to his God, and the words of the seers who spoke to him, and the name of the Lord, God of Israel. Indeed, they are written in the book of the kings of Israel. Also his prayer, and how God received his entreaty, and all his sin and trespasses, and the sites where he built high places and set up wooden images and carved images before he was humbled. Indeed, they are written among the sayings of Hosea. So Manasseh rested with his fathers, and they buried him in his own house. Then his son Amon reigned in his place. So, you know, we have a little bit more there. And then if we stay in 2 Chronicles, we come across another evil king, which is King Amon. And he had a very, very short reign of 2 years, but that's in chapter 33. And of course, that starts right after where we ended there. Verses 21 through 23 says, Amon was 22 years old when he became king, and he reigned 2 years in Jerusalem. But he did evil in the sight of the Lord, and his father Manasseh had done. For Amon sacrificed to all the carved images which his father Manasseh had made and served them. He did not humble himself before the Lord, as his father Manasseh had humbled himself. But Naaman trespassed more and more. You know, obviously here, Manasseh, you know, we read that part where he, you know, was maybe trying to turn there at the very end. But obviously Manasseh didn't get rid of all the idols he had made. It says right here that, you know, verses 22, 23, but he did evil in the sight of the Lord, and he had sacrificed to all those images which his father had made. Well, they were still there. So, didn't get rid of them. And he, you know, he didn't humble himself before the Lord. But he, so what's that mean? But Naaman trespassed more and more.
Continued to sin.
Yeah, he just continued. Continued more and more and more, went deeper and deeper, and things got worse and worse.
It's really unusual to see that, at least I think it is, that Manasseh, you know, here's someone that acts, he was a deceiver and led people astray, and yet at the end, he finally came to his senses, which makes me think that, you know, he got started when he was extremely young doing these things, mm-hmm. and he probably never knew the Lord at all.
Probably not.
Maybe his son Ammon, or maybe some of the others, you know, they knew right from wrong, and chose it. Where maybe Manasseh, as a young boy, just naturally went that way.
Yeah.
Then he, you know, whenever he was taken captive, the hard, cold facts of life
hit him. Yeah, it for sure did. That's why I thought it was neat to come back here to 2 Chronicles and see that, because we didn't get that before, and we don't see that turn. But yeah, it's interesting. You know, Christian's 12, and I was trying to put that in perspective. You know, imagine him being kind of funny. You know, that's when you're reading these stories and that comes to life, you're like, oh, yeah, Christian being the king. Hmm. I was going to say, I can't even get him in charge of cleaning his own room. But yeah, but no, we don't need to. Yeah, so pretty interesting. But Mike, you bring up a good point. You know, who knows what he was fully exposed to, what he knew. But, you know, obviously at a young age, you're a leader. And where are you getting your answers? From those you're surrounded with and those who are influencing you. And like Dwayne said, you probably had a lot of lying and waiting for, okay, how can we influence this kid to try to do the things we want to be done.
I just think of all the plotting and planning years before he ever became king.
Yeah. And then when he does, I'm sure they were there to help. They were there to give him all the answers. So yeah. So here we see him, like say, had a little change of heart, but it didn't matter, and then his son Naaman was just as bad or worse and reigned for a couple of years and did evil on the side of the Lord. So, and then we've got Josiah's reign, and that is here in 2 Chronicles chapter 34 and 35. Of course, verse 1 says, Josiah was 8 years old when he became king, and he reigned 31 years in Jerusalem. Again, you know, it's kind of hard to believe. Let's see here. And I'm not going to read all of this because we could, and it's interesting. But verse 14 of that same chapter there in 34. Now when they had brought out the money that was brought into the house of the Lord, Hilkiah the priest found the book of the law the Lord given to Moses. Dad, was it you that just mentioned this the other day? I think you were, yeah. So, you know, kind of interesting here. Of course, that's why I'm not going to read it again. But him finding and reading the book of the law, coming across it, you know, it says he was shocked and frightened, humbled, I guess. It's different in different versions. But when the book of the law was read to him, he was shocked. He was frightened. You know, it was enlightening, I guess you would say.
His helper, Shaphan, he gave the book to Shaphan, and he carried it to the king, and then he read it to the king. Shaphan is a good character that actually, I think, and his sons had influence that helped keep Jeremiah alive, because Jeremiah was very close to being put to death. But I think by the influence of these men, he was left.
Receives them, yeah. Okay. Any other thoughts about that, or just kind of what we've got started here on Josiah? So how had Josiah, you know, again, we're not reading through all that, but how had Josiah, if you will, sought after the Lord? What do we read about him when he was doing what he thought? How was he serving God? Does anybody remember?
Well, of course, he, you know, started out as an 8-year-old king.
Yeah.
But I think a few years went by before they actually found the law and brought it to him. So then he was still a young man when he found it.
Mm-hmm.
And what he was doing between that time, I don't know. Whether we're really told.
Well, we get a little insight, like you say. So I'm looking for something specific that you would have had to probably read. But what did he do? Yeah. Yeah, so basically, his way of kind of serving God was anything he saw that wasn't of God, he was kind of on a mission to destroy it. So that's exactly what I was looking for, Theta. And that is that anything that he thought was not of God or from God, he just spent his time getting it destroyed. You know, he himself or whoever. Which, if you think about it, so at this point, that countryside would have been littered with idols. And idolatry, you know, idolatrous worship, it had been very entrenched. There'd have been a lot of it. So if you can imagine, there was probably a lot of destroying at that time, you know. That's what he spent his time doing.
Clayton,
yeah.
It is interesting there. I never noticed this in 2 Chronicles 34. In verse 3 it says, in the 8th year of his reign, while he was still young, he began to seek the God of his father David. So when he was 16, that's when he decides to seek God. And then 4 years later, when he's 12, or excuse me,
yeah.
Anyway, you know what I'm saying? When he's 20 years old,
uh-huh.
4 years later, this is before he finds the law. He does start to tear down mm-hmm. high places and purge the land. And then when he finds the book of the law, he's still terrified.
Yeah, I was going to say, that even probably made him tremble more. So again, you go back to these young kids being leaders, and it is going to be completely. I mean, even think about some of us in the church who maybe were leaders as a younger person. You had people that were influencing you, hopefully good, whether it was your own parents, but even at work or in that workplace. I mean, I think back when I was 21 and managing over 100 people, I look back at some of the mistakes I made, or I look back at some counseling I'd received at work or whoever I was around. But think about these kids that were leaders, kings, and who was influencing them. And you get the feeling here, just as you pointed out, that he had to have someone that was some positive influence. I mean, I doubt very seriously that he just whimsically one day woke up and thought, oh, I need to destroy these things and this is not good. Was part of that God, just enough to have influence over someone that had influence over him? You'd have to think so. But it is interesting. I mean, you can go through each one, and they all have kind of their unique story about what they did or how they handled those things. But
well, and there were some prophets in existence at this time too. It doesn't come out to say that, but Isaiah, I think, was around. And
I'd have to.
There's probably others that were around at this time too. Maybe that's where he heard some of the word.
Well, and look at some of the prophets that was as we were going through Jeremiah. Look at both sides of what was happening there, you know. So interesting, yeah. Okay. And then in chapter 35, Josiah had care in celebrating the Passover properly, if you will. If you had your quote signs up for properly, you know, there in verse 4 it says, prepare yourselves according to your father's houses, according to your divisions, and I'm in chapter 35, following the written instructions of David, king of Israel, and the written instruction of Solomon, his son. So here we're talking about the celebration of the Passover and following those directions written by David, you know, king of Israel. And then you come down to verse 18 and says, there had been no Passover kept in Israel like that since the days of Samuel the prophet, and none of the kings of Israel had kept such a Passover as Josiah kept, with the priests and the Levites, all Judah and Israel who were present, and all the inhabitants of Jerusalem. So here we have this time where it's pointing out that, you know, up to this point for a long time, no such Passover had been kept like that, you know, in those days. which is kind of interesting that, you know, he points out there in verse 4, let's do according to our fathers, you know, houses. And let's follow the instructions of David. Any comments about that or that chapter? I mean, as I came across that, and then you read, like, say, I read verse 18, there have been no Passover kept in Israel like that since the days of Samuel, the prophet.
That's pretty incredible.
Yeah. So how long, what would that span be? Someone that's got a better timeline in their head than I didn't figure
Samuel
it.
Samuel was around 1100 BC, or 1000 BC, around 1000 BC, and this is like around 600 BC, maybe?
Right.
Yeah.
So 400 years.
I thought David lived 600 years before Christ.
He was
more than 1000. He divided in 933 BC, so David was around 1000.
Well, when Ted made his comment a while ago about that there was prophets around when Josiah, I have a remark in my Bible that says the book of the law was discovered in 622 B.C. Jeremiah was on good terms with Josiah and lamented when he was killed in 609 B.C. by Pharaoh Necho of Necho of Egypt.
Okay, well,
Ted said 600, he's pretty close.
Yeah. A lot of years. So it had not been kept in Israel like that since the days of Samuel. So, pretty amazing. And then, of course, 19 in the 18th year of the reign of Josiah, the Passover was kept. So, gives you an idea of the Passover being kept there properly. Let's see, anything else in that? And then kind of the conclusion of this age that we've been doing here in chapter 36. I'm just going to read the first 10 verses here. It says, "Then the people of the land took Jehoaz, the son of Josiah, and made him king in the father's place in Jerusalem." Jehoaz was 23 years old when he became king, and he reigned 3 months in Jerusalem. Now the king of Egypt deposed him at Jerusalem, and he imposed on the land a tribute of 100 talents of silver and a talent of gold. Then the king of Egypt made his brother Eliakim king over Judah and Jerusalem, and changed his name to Jehoiakim. And Necho took Jehoahaz, his brother, and carried him off to Egypt. Jehoiakim was 25 years old when he became king, and he reigned 11 years in Jerusalem, and he did evil in the sight of the Lord his God. Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came up against him and bound him in bronze fetters to carry him off to Babylon. Nebuchadnezzar also carried off some of the articles from the house of the Lord to Babylon and put them in his temple at Babylon. Now the rest of the acts of Jehoiakim, the abominations which he did, and what was found against him, indeed are written in the book of the kings of Israel. And Judah, the Jehoiachin, his son, reigned in his place. Jehoiachin was 8 years old when he became king, and he reigned in Jerusalem 3 months and 10 days, and did evil in the sight of the Lord. And the turn of the year, King Nebuchadnezzar summoned him and took him to Babylon with the costly articles from the house of the Lord. He had made Zedekiah, Jehoiakim's brother, king over Judah and Jerusalem. You know, I think it's interesting. Of course, there's a lot of things there that's interesting. But Jehoiachin was 8 years old when he became king. So I'm in verse 9. And he reigned in Jerusalem 3 months and 10 days. And he did evil in the sight of the Lord. So how does this eight-year-old boy rule for 3 months, 10 days, and he did evil in the sight of the Lord? But what?
It'd have to be the people that was really...
Sure. That's what... Yeah, exactly. Because number one, what kind of power did you have for 3 months? None, really. And then, you know, like you say, how was it that you were doing evil? But kind of sad. You know, you think about these kids. I mean, those of you who have 10-year-olds or younger, and you're thinking about them being leaders, and they were doing evil in the sight of God. But who was doing evil in the sight of God? I mean, you think about your kids today. Your kids up to, I don't even know what age, but they're doing what you're asking them to do. They're, or whoever's around them, supporting them. But pretty sad. And then we've got Zedekiah's reign. We'll just finish this up. We've got about 8 minutes left. I wanted to read through this. Zedekiah's reign. If you so we'll read 11. Well, I think we've got time. 11 through 23. It says, Zedekiah was 21 years old when he became king, and he reigned 11 years in Jerusalem. He also did evil in the sight of the Lord, his God, and did not humble himself before Jeremiah the prophet, who spoke from the mouth of the Lord. And also rebelled against King Nebuchadnezzar, who had made him swear an oath by God. But he stiffened his neck and hardened his heart against turning to the Lord God of Israel. Moreover, all of the leaders of the priests and the people transgressed more and more according to all the abominations of the nations, and defiled the house of the Lord, which he had consecrated in Jerusalem. And the Lord God of their fathers sent warnings to them by messengers, rising up early and sending them, because he had compassion on his people and on his dwelling place. But they mocked the messengers of God, despised his words, and scoffed at his prophets, until the wrath of the Lord arose against his people, till there was no remedy. Therefore he brought against them the king of the Chaldeans, who killed their young men with the sword in the house of their sanctuary, and had no compassion on young men or virgin, on the aged or the weak. He gave them all into his hand. And all the articles from the house of God, great and small, the treasures of the house of the Lord, and the treasures of the king of the leaders, all these he took to Babylon. Then they burned the house of God, broke down all the walls of Jerusalem, burned all the palaces with their fire, and destroyed its previous possessions. And those who escaped from the sword he carried away to Babylon, where they became servants to him and his sons until the reign of the kingdom of Persia, to fulfill the word of the Lord by the mouth of Jeremiah, until the land had destroyed their Sabbaths. As long as she lay desolate, she kept Sabbath to fulfill 70 years. Now the first year of Cyrus, king of Persia, that the word of the Lord had spoken by the mouth of Jeremiah might be fulfilled, the Lord stirred up the spirit of Cyrus, king of Persia, so that he made a proclamation through all of his kingdom and put it in his writing, saying, "Thus says Cyrus, king of Persia, all the kingdom of the earth of the Lord of God, heaven, has given me, and he has commanded me to build him a house at Jerusalem, which is in Judah, who is there among you, all his people. May the Lord his God be with him, and let him go up." Interesting how this just dovetails right into Jeremiah. But, you know, we see in verse 12, he did evil in the sight of the Lord. Verse 14 says he transgressed more than before. And, you know, verse 15, there was warning because there was compassion. You know, we see that over and over and over. He had compassion on his people, and so he continued to try to give warnings. But what happened? Verse 16, he was mocked. There was no, the book of Ezra. Yeah, Tad.
Just something I think is interesting. I'm sure we all noticed how in 1 and 2 Kings, it references the books of Chronicles.
Mm-hmm.
And Chronicles, it seems to be referencing Kings.
Yeah.
But then here in Chronicles, it just references the prophet Jeremiah.
Here at the end, it does, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what there is to say about that. It's just interesting how all of these books...
Yeah. Yeah, they're definitely tied together. Like you say, you know, I was reading, and you know, you come to the end of this, and it's about Jeremiah. You know, so yeah, they're all intertwined. But yeah, for sure, when you're in Kings, it's talking about the books of the Chronicles, and then Chronicles talks about the books of the Kings. So that's interesting. Any other comments about that, or the end of this divided kingdom, or the kings, before we move on next week? Yeah.
Setting fire to the temple. And we would assume that all of the valuable things inside would have been destroyed.
Yep.
And you just wonder what...
What came of...
an impact on them as they were being taken away. I mean, I think that would have been quite a sight to have seen that burning.
You would think. Yeah, that verse 13, though, you know, stiff-necked and hardened heart, you know, that, I mean, that's...
Verse 18 says that they took the treasures and all that kind of stuff to Babylon. Mm. They did destroy a lot of
makes you wonder if it all, yeah, if it all.
A lot of things.
You know, the temple had been stripped years before this, too. They had taken a lot of the precious things.
Oh, yeah. Well, look at the gold that came up, yeah.
It happened over a period of few years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I imagine they had stripped everything of value out of the temple.
Probably.
There's a lot of those relics, though, that were in the temple, like Aaron said, that would have just been burned up.
Yeah.
I mean, like Aaron's staff.
The ark.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, what?
They would have taken.
Yeah.
Didn't they melt the gold off the doors and stuff when we read?
Was that during Hezekiah's reign?
Yeah. So, you know, how much of it did they take? And how much of it they did not care about and just burn it? Like I say, anything probably valuable they tried, or, you know, you would think. But, yeah, quite like you said, quite an end. What kind of impact would that have? Or were you just in such a place that it didn't have any impact?
So that Ark of the Covenant, it never did come back into play, did it, after this destruction?
No, we're told, I don't remember where it is, we're told that the Ark will not be remembered. The idea, I think, from that is that it's just going to be lost.
Yeah, well, makes you wonder if that's, yeah.
Well, I mean, we talk, again, we're kind of blending this class and
yeah.
Every class we talked about it, but, you know, the Housatan, the golden snake, look what the people did with it. Well, how much more of that would they have done if they were able to keep the ark?
Right.
It would have been turned into an idol.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think along the same lines, that's why we don't have a picture of Jesus. I was thinking about that this week. You know, all these paintings, all these pictures we have depicted of Jesus, that's not what he looked like.
Right.
Because God doesn't want us to know
we don't
exactly
need it.
What he looked like, and God doesn't want us to know what he looks like.
No reason to.
It can't be described by mankind.
Yeah.
His appearance. He's too much to comprehend. He's too much to put on, you know, to reduce to a sheet of paper.
Right.
And say, this is God.
To an image, yeah.
The last verse of First Chronicles